In the military, the term got your six means I've got your back. It's a promise of trust, support, and camaraderie. The Got Your Six Real Estate Podcast embodies this spirit, offering unwavering guidance for military personnel, their families, and real estate professionals. Join your host, Kevin Onosik, who shares market trends, expert insights, and stories. Now let's get started with Got Your Six.
Well, officially welcome to the next episode of the Got Your Six Real Estate Podcast. We're here today with the three K's. We have Catherine, our special guest, myself, Kevin, and our producer, Christina, back there behind the camera, behind the mic, making sure that everything goes well. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Catherine's a real estate agent, realtor, and is part of a military family, so she brings a lot of background there for us today. So I guess just jumping right into it, Catherine, tell me a little bit about yourself and your business.
Well, I taught for 14 years, and I decided once my husband went on his final deployment, we would move back from Fort Bragg to here, which I'm originally from, Williamsburg area, grew up here. And so I was walking and homeschooling the kids. And I was talking to my friend. She's like, what do you think you want to do? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, well, you always loved real estate. So I started going to school at night for my real estate license. And then I started interviewing brokers once I got my license and passed on my test. And then I got started in the business, and I naively thought that it was going to be a part-time gig, you know, like that thing where it's like, you get into it for part-time. God has definitely abundantly blessed me ever since my second year in real estate. I was Long and Foster, a rising star. And since then, I have been very blessed with clients that keep returning to me.
Nice. So, and you're with a company called Swell Real Estate now, right?
Correct. So I have the opportunity about a year ago, Swell Real Estate presented me with a supervising broker. And you know, with the teacher background, I love the contracts. Like, I love reading about the contracts. I love studying the contracts. I like knowing the ins and outs, the best way to negotiate. And as you know, we're in an area that has three different types of contracts. You know, you have the RAIN, the VR contracts, and the CVR contracts. And then if you're fortunate enough, you may even have a Bright contract. However, those three I'm very proficient in. And so now I enjoy teaching others how to do it.
Very good. Now, you mentioned being a supervising broker. What's in between a broker and just a regular realtor, real estate agent?
So one, a broker means that, of course, we have more experience and more education. And it means that I can open up my own firm if I want to. I have a lot more leniency with where I choose to go. I can also have concurrent license, which I do have concurrent license.
What's that mean?
So a concurrent license means that I'm able to hold a license with several different companies. Okay. As long as the principal brokers agree to it. So for example, I do my commercial with Hamner Development Company. Hmm. So he's been, he allows me to work with him on any of my commercial. And then I do Swell Real Estate. I do my residential sales with.
Oh, cool. I didn't know you did commercial.
Yeah.
Very good. Have you done any commercial transactions recently? Anything exciting? Like, what are some of the commercial things that you're passionate about?
I actually, I use Hamner Development as a tool more so. Mm-hmm. And I do commercial kind of on the down low.
Okay.
because I have some contractors that own their own business. And so if they ever want to know more about any property that's for sale or anything else like that, I kind of do the behind the scene things. And I'm fortunate because Bill Hamner has years of experience with it.
Okay.
So it's nice to have him as a tool in order to offer that to the clients as well. And for me to learn.
Cool. That just gives you another layer of knowledge that you can use to help out your clients.
Correct. And then I do property management as well.
Awesome. So how long have you been in the real estate side of the business? To, you know, that since you left teaching and came over to this exciting arena?
Teaching really does prepare you, though. You know, you can't choose who you get for 10 months, but what's nice is in real estate, you and the client can both choose if you want to work together, which is fantastic. So I've been in it since, I know, 8 years this summer will be it. I can't even remember if that's 16 or 17 that I came in.
Okay. I completely agree. This is one of the biggest things people will do in their life is buying and selling real estate. It's a significant transaction. And I tell people that all the time. There's a lot of great professionals out there. You've got to find the one that's your fit, somebody that you like working with, someone that, you know, is a personality fit. You know, so it's something that I think is very important to have that mesh. So in the 8 years since you started, what's changed? What have you seen any differences in your profession or just in our real estate market here?
Well, I will have to say I have moved a lot. So I've moved probably about 30 times in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And with that, I already knew from a young age that there's ebbs in real estate. But everything is cyclical, right? I mean, like, I remember when I purchased my first house, that was back in 2001. And I was so happy that I had a zero down teacher's loan. And it was 7.125 interest rate. And now it's like, then when I got into the business, it was great because then it was at like 4%, then all the way down to like 2% and 1%. And now it's gone back up a little bit. And I'm like, no, it's gone just to what I had experienced in my early 20s. And then if you go even further back, no one even thought it was going to break what, like 16%, 18%.
Right.
So I think that nothing is, quote, changing per se. It's just coming back around. And I think that sometimes what the media portrays, especially with everything going on with the NAR, they're not realizing that, like, for example, buyer agency has been in Virginia since, I believe, like 2012. More or less, it's just behind the scene things that are changing with the rules of the MLSs.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. It is cyclical. And the pandemic era of 2% and 3% rates was never sustainable. It was just a bunch of government money pumped in everywhere, including in mortgages. And that's why we've got a less inflation right now. So we're paying the price when we go to the grocery store, but mortgage rates are average. You mentioned, you know, 16, 17s, you know, folks in our parents' generation, that's what they were looking at. And if they got, it was unheard of to think you could get a mortgage rate in the single digits. My first house was an FHA in the sevens, and, you know, I was happy to get that. So, yeah, it's really just perception. It's all relative, and it's definitely all cyclical.
Well, speaking of the pandemic, too, one thing that I do like about interest rates going up a little bit and that we're out of the pandemic is a lot of realtors got into the business and they weren't educated. And so I think one good thing that's coming out of this is those that aren't educating, that aren't producing the way that they need to in the interest of their clients, will fall out. I don't see them staying in the next year or so. I also tell buyers to not to be afraid of the rate. You know, I know that you do, Brian Buffini, you're familiar with them. And, you know, they always say, date the rate, marry the mortgage. So in my opinion, what I see too is a few years ago, people were paying over and above what the purchase price was, but they had a lower interest rate. Well, that's great, but you're paying over and above. And I mean, like, I had buyer clients that I was working with for like a year, 2 years before we could get even putting in great offers.
Right.
Whereas normally a buyer could find something in 6 to 8 weeks. So one thing that's positive about that's come out of it is that there's less competition on a buyer side, enough for a seller to be happy, but enough for the buyers to actually stand a chance of getting it. And then later on, they can always refinance.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I've been in my house 6 years and I started out at a 4-point interest rate, and then I refinanced 2 times to get down to a 2.25 interest rate.
Wow.
So it's always going to be available. And we're talking 30 years is a long time.
That's right. Yep. And you get constant home appreciation. You know, one thing is for certain, real estate gets more expensive.
Yes,
you know,
it
real
is.
Estate appreciates.
And the tax people want to come after you and raise your tax assessed value $200,000.
My real estate taxes went up over $1,000 a year. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the home equity, but it doesn't do you any good unless you're selling. That tax bills is going to be a whopper. Now, you mentioned National Association of Realtors. We call it NAR. NAR. They've been in the news a lot, and the media does hype things up. And I think it's going to be moving forward with some of the changes that are coming down the road. We are going to need true real estate professionals, experienced people. So there's a lot of questions about buyer's agents, buyer's agency. What does a buyer's agent really do for someone? Why should someone have a buyer's agent representing them versus going it alone?
Well, let's go to the law. So we have the Virginia Disclosure Property Act, right? It's a 3-page summary that every buyer and every seller has to sign to acknowledge. Kind of like when you go to the doctor, you have to acknowledge that you have the HIPAA, right?
Right.
Whether you agree with the HIPAA or don't agree with the HIPAA, you have to sign saying that you've at least received the opportunity to read it. Well, this is the same thing with this Disclosure Act. And if you take the time to read it, it's basically in a nutshell saying that Virginia is a buyer beware state. So know that as a buyer that you have to have an advocate for you. You have to have an advocate going to bat for you who knows, one, in this particular area, the 3 different contracts that could be presented, and they're all written differently. So it takes a buyer agency agent to know, you know, what is covered under the CVR, what is covered under the RAIN. You know, the VAR doesn't cover this certain one, so we need to make sure that this addendum is done. So if you don't have someone who is an advocate for you and your interest, I think that you're putting yourself in a situation that could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars, especially for the things that are unseen. You know, there it's important to like have the home inspection. If you're not from this area, or even if you're from this area, you know, you don't know who a home inspector is unless you Google something. Well, how do you know that person? You know, someone could be really good on Google, but not really good for you. So I think it's important that they walk you through the process so that you're not caught off guard with like how much you're going to bring with the earnest money deposit, how much an appraisal could cost, when you should order the appraisal. That's really important because they can lose out on that money right away, right? And not get it back. When they can get out of the contract, because I find that a lot of times first-time homebuyers are afraid to take that plunge because they're so scared that once they're in a contract that they're just stuck, and they're not stuck. You know, if you have a good buyer agent, they have put parameters in there to protect that buyer and have communicated with them like, hey, this is your point of no return. So right. If you want out, this is your point out. I think it's important for them to know how much cash they need to have for the home inspection. You know, if it's on a well or a septic, how much you could be expected to do. If you need a WDI or a WDO, which is a wood destroying insect or organism report. And especially if you're a veteran, there are certain things that you can't pay for. And most importantly, veterans can't pay for their own buyer agent.
Right.
So they would either have to choose to be unrepresented, or hopefully the seller will choose to allow the listing agent to split the commission.
Right, right. Yeah, I was watching something on Instagram this morning. I've spent way too much time on Instagram. But it was talking about some state that's adding a disclosure of all the things that's not going to happen if you don't have a buyer's agent. You know, the listing agent would have them sign saying you're unrepresented, you don't have anybody to negotiate the contract, the listing agent is not responsible to determine a fair market value from the buyer's side in making an offer. The listing agent's not responsible for filling out the contract and any errors that may happen that don't protect the buyer. Listing agent's not responsible for scheduling your inspections or even recommending them, keeping you on the timelines. Timelines are important in the contract.
Yes, it is.
You know, so there's a lot of things that even experienced buyers, if you don't do it every day, that you're just have a huge risk and liability of missing, and then you're in breach of contract.
Correct. And then, as you know, Virginia is one of the few states that dual agency is involved. So if you were the seller and I was the buyer, we would have the same person representing us. And at that point, too, anytime that you have dual agency, that agent can no longer advise you. They have to be ethical, but they can't advise you. And that's one thing that's good about having a buyer agent is there have been some times when I've told clients, you need to run. This is over your head. Or there's been times that I've told clients, you're going to regret not moving forward with this house. So when you're a dual agent, and it puts the listing agent in a place of where they're either going to have to do dual agency or designated agency or unrepresented agency. I didn't mean designated agency, dual agency or unrepresented. And who wants to be unrepresented in a transaction? It's not that agent, listing agent's job to, again, like you said, tell the buyer what needs to be done. And then if it's dual, then how is that doing your fiduciary responsibility to the clients?
Right.
The only time I really do anything dual agency is like if you were to sell it to a family member, or like I have investors who do property management with me, and it, like one investor may sell to another investor, and I have that relationship, and it's a business transaction. But I definitely don't recommend it overall.
Cool. Well, hey, we're going to switch gears real quick, Catherine. HGTV. I saw in your bio that you were on House Hunters. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, I assume you were on TV. What was that experience all about?
I was. Am I getting a little red in the face now?
We got a celebrity to guest today.
No, so and let's just say, as you can tell, I'm not a scripted person right now. Hopefully that's coming across. HGTV I did in February of 2018. I had the opportunity. A client wanted to do it. And so we did it. And
was it hard to get on? Like, was it a tough application process, or did they do all that?
I remember my husband going with me and having to film me in a house, and I had to answer some questions, and that was nerve-wracking.
Okay.
I like having someone else ask me this, and it makes it a little easier, but doing that whole process, it was a little, not my forte on that one.
Okay.
And so when we got onto it, what I didn't know, and I hate for this to be a spoiler alert, but the three properties, they've already been under contract. For one.
Oh my gosh, we watch those shows all the time and think the same thing. Like, right, they're going to see these properties, and by the time, especially in this market, by the time they get this arranged, they've got to be like have multiple offers. Are they holding them? Like, what's going on?
So remember, this was 2018 when the market was still like, you know, had a few days on the market. But the client of mine had already purchased the house, and then we pretended like they were looking at it for the first time.
No way.
And then I had to find two other properties that would be similar, right?
Right.
And one hadn't been on the market when the clients were actually looking. So when we went to the other one, the husband actually liked the other one better.
That's funny.
But they were already closed on the other one.
Okay.
So it was interesting. And then I was told, well, you can say this. And I'm like, So there are certain times when you can see my personality really coming out, and I touch something or I do something that is kind of me.
Right.
Like it had like red velvet on the wall. Okay.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't help but like touch it and make a comment. I don't even remember what comment I said, but you know, it's red velvet on a wall. So it was a unique experience. I was asked to do it again, but I graciously declined.
Okay.
That's
funny. One thing I have learned about reality TV is
it's not reality.
Out of this. Yeah, I used to be on the James City County Board of Supervisors and was on the tourism board and whatnot. And we had this, remember that old movie Cannonball Run with Burt Reynolds, where it was like a cross-country road race?
Yes, yes, yes.
There was that type of thing, and it was being broadcast. I remember it was actually on TV, but like online TV kind of thing, whatever. And the producer was a reality TV producer, and he came and said, yeah, I'm a producer, and reality TV is scripted. You know, there's nothing spontaneous. We tell everybody what to say and what to do and put them in certain situations. You know, so while reality TV is fun, I think that is hilarious that the houses aren't even for sale anymore that you're going to look at.
Well, the two other twos are for sale.
Okay.
The one that they actually chose or choose,
yes,
they're already under contract with. So, and
that's
then I had the realtors calling me going, where's my sign? My sign was taken down. And I'm like, I don't know. I had pink eye. I was sick as a dog that time we showed up. I got the whole crew infected. I felt horrible.
Oh no.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it was, I'm glad I had the experience. I'm glad I can put it on my card, but it was definitely a unique one.
That's interesting. Here, since you come from a military family,
oh, an
I have
MRE.
A surprise for you. We're going to do a taste test on an MRE.
Oh, no.
We have a whole box of them. I figured since we're recording about lunchtime.
Oh, but did you know I was a vegetarian?
I did not.
I'm just kidding.
I was just kidding. I can take in the box. I got a whole box of MREs here, different flavors and styles.
You know, they put M&Ms in MREs too. Mm-hmm. I see you left those out.
Well, back in the day, didn't they put cigarettes in MREs? Like in like World War I, World War II or something?
They could have.
So let's bust out our MRE and do a taste test. Mm-hmm. While we talk about military stuff.
Is that why she gave me the water to be prepared?
Oh my, this looks lovely. So we have a sandwich.
Oh my God.
Shelf stable Italian style sausage, pepperoni, and sauce in bread.
Yeah. I did tell you I wasn't actually in the military. My husband was.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, military spouse.
Yeah.
And we'll ask a couple questions about that too. So let's see. Yeah, let's bust it open. Let's break it open.
Let me see what it looks like. Wow.
It appears
actually, like a Hot Pocket.
Dry and bready, like a thin Hot Pocket.
It says sausage, pepperoni, and sauce in bread.
Let's see.
Okay. It was softer than I thought it was.
It's soft and very dry.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever want more, I think I have tons in my garage.
The bread is just tastes like bread. The meaty filling is not tasty. I wouldn't put this up there with my tops of the MREs. Your face looks just like kind of, I think mine does. Not pleasant. You want to taste it? Christina over there, hide now. I didn't take a bite off its hat.
It actually isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's not hideous, but it's not great either.
See, my husband has an older sister who was a sous chef, okay? And so she made him work the lines.
Okay.
And then when she would fire someone, she would be like, David, you get on that. You're taking that prep. And so he learned how to do it. So he's like the gourmet cook. So I'm used to like his really nice cooking. However, when he was deployed, I would have eaten this more so that I wouldn't, because I would get so mad when he would say, what did you do today? I'm like, I went to the commissary. He's like, what else? Well, I'm like, okay, I have a 3-week-old baby, a 4-year-old kid, and getting them both into the car, driving all the way. We lived in Kingsmill at the time, Kingsmill to Fort Eustis Commissary, then going up and down every aisle, packing it, loading the car, unloading the car once you got home, getting the kids out, putting the stuff up, preparing for dinner. So I learned cereal was a very good aspect, and salad where you could just throw stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Now, coming from a background being a military spouse, I would think some of the challenges to a military spouse when someone's moving can be pretty significant. And that's a unique experience that you bring to someone who is a military family, maybe moving to the area. Are there any unique challenges military families in general face when buying a home? And what about that military spouse if the other is deployed and they're having to handle a lot of it? Kind of what, how do you help military families manage that, and what challenges do you see that they may have?
Well, I'm sure you've always heard the hurry up and wait. You know, you're always told, oh, well, you may be getting it 3 months from now, or it could be 6 months from now. I will have to say one thing I miss. My husband is out of the military currently. One thing I miss, the only thing I miss, is the camaraderie. And like, it's an unspoken understanding with a spouse who calls you what they're going through. Like, it's not something that can be explained. I don't know how else to explain it. So you've either lived on post or you haven't. You've either had someone deployed or you haven't had someone deployed. You've gone through the stubbornness of not wanting to ask for help, but realizing you need help. So it's like a pride thing that you have to get over as well. So there's a lot of things that come into play, and the unknowns, because you're like, okay, we're told this thing, but it could change last minute. I mean, how many military do you see that build new construction that later have to get out of it because their duty station changed,
right?
You know, and you can't keep them in the contract for that. So what I always do is I advise every spouse who calls me, I'll say, okay, what is the date? And then and that's the only time on this side that I'll actually help if they even need a rental. So like, I'll go around and take them, even if it's not my rental, because I understand the situation that they're in.
Right.
So I spend a whole day. I tell them, don't even bother looking until like a week before you come, because those houses are probably not going to be on the market. You're going to drive yourself insane. Tell me the day you're coming. I'll take you. I'll spend all day with you. I'll take you to it, and we'll find you something. And one thing about military is I love working with them. They very rarely get caught up on a forever home. I see a lot of buyers miss out on some really good equity and credit building because they're afraid to leap into it. Whereas a military family knows that they're going to be here maybe 2, 3, 5 years, and they're not afraid to leap into a house, build the equity, or because we're saturated with military here and we have a great rental market, they can rent it and have it paid for. And if they want to have this be their final duty station, they can have a house that's almost paid for here, or sell it and buy a house somewhere else.
I know military families have done that. You know, they'll get transferred every certain number of years. They'll buy a house, they'll keep it,
mm-hmm.
and then move to the next one. Then they'll rent that out, and the mortgage is being paid. You can build a fortune in real estate investing.
Absolutely.
By being in the military, being deployed, and you can use your VA eligibility more than once. You know, a lot of folks don't know that. So a military member purchasing, you can use your VA eligibility to get a VA mortgage at House A, then use it again at House B with what they call remaining eligibility. And then to go to House C, you probably can't have a third VA mortgage, but you could refinance one of your first two into a conventional mortgage. Then use your VA again to buy with no down payment. You know, so there's a lot of investment opportunity out there for military folks, and that's a great way to amass a fortune in real estate, prepare for retirement, and, you know, just become a very savvy investor.
Correct. And talking about refinancing too, I've had clients that refinance their house and actually take the cash from it and purchase a large parcel of land, because I've noticed that a lot of military people want to have space. You know, they get to the point to where they're tired of being confined, so they want space. So they plan for these acreages. And that's a great way to pay cash, because no matter what, the land is paid for. And eventually you're either going to sell this house that you've already refinanced on And once that's all paid off, then you just have icing on the cake with whatever's left over.
So after you've been stationed in a submarine for your 20-year career, you might want a little breathing room.
No, we were an Army family, so we wouldn't have been in submarines.
Yeah. I was Army also.
You know, but although I will have to say the Air Force, I never got over that where we were living on Bragg and we would still have to go to Pope and we'd have to go through that. And I'm like, how can 10 feet look better? How can 10 feet look better when you go from an Army to an Air Force? But what can I say? Hey,
we love to joke about the Air Force has it tricky, has it easy.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. I will say, though, going back to the loan process again, this area is saturated. So it's very important for sellers, especially with all what the media is going to say. Keep in mind, you want to go ahead and have your listing agent be able to offer half or some or of their commission to the selling broker. The selling broker is the one who represents the buyer.
I just find that confusing.
I know.
Broker is the buyer's agent.
Correct. And the listing. Yeah, it doesn't. I didn't make up the terms.
I know.
But keep that in mind when you're going to sell your house, because this area, if you don't offer that, the veteran cannot use it or the active duty person cannot use it. So they may not even come and see your house. And yeah, it can drastically 50% at least in this area, I would think. I mean, I don't know stats. So,
but yeah, it's a military buyer using a VA mortgage. It's a great buyer. It's a much easier mortgage to get approved in than anything else. You know, they're very flexible on credit, very flexible on affordability. So rarely do we ever have any buyer challenges or issues come up that would tank a mortgage. So you can be confident that a military buyer is going to close. You know, they do have some appraisal myth, the scariness behind them. But, you know, the nice thing about a VA appraisal is if it appears the value might be coming in low, they tell you and they give you an opportunity to give some justification for that home value versus other mortgage programs. You don't quite get that. So yeah, you would miss out on a lot if you're not being open to VA military buyers on your listing that you're selling.
Mm-hmm. And I have found that military families also are the get her done type of families.
Yes.
And they're not the ones that tend to be super picky on asking for X, Y, Z. You know, it's more or less like, does the roof work? Is there a leak? Is there plumbing issue, foundation issues? You know, they're not the ones that tend to nickel and dime on home inspections. For example, agency referral is great too, because I value other agents and we have fantastic agents in here too that definitely educate their sellers on this matter. I had a referral given to me and we just closed on the property on Friday and it was a military daughter. Okay. She had grown up and she was telling me how her brother he's the special needs and he needed little miniature ponies to help him with his speech and stuff. So here they are, they're going across country as they're PCSing and they have to find places that will take their little ponies as they go across. Aww. And everywhere they went, you know, her parents always did like the floors, just hands-on with projects. So here she is with her very first home. She walks in, we have issue after issue. She's like, not a problem. I can climb up on the roof. I can put it on there. I just need someone to hold the ladder. I like that type. And I see that with the military. Like, it's just like, nope. Okay. That is an obstacle, but guess what? I have a solution or I'm going to address it head on. And I like that. I really like that about how they're reared, how they're exposed to that attitude of I can get it done.
I'm sure. If it came with ponies and they needed a place to stay, my wife would be like, come on, you can stay at our house. We live in just a residential, you know, suburban neighborhood, and I'm sure that's not allowed, but she would try to sneak them around and
Yeah, but you have other properties too that you can allow them to.
With more spacious properties too. Cool. So, Catherine, what do you like to do when you're not selling real estate?
I used to like playing volleyball, and then I got older, and my knees started paying for it.
I see a lot of dog pictures on your Facebook.
Oh,
dog person.
You know, it's kind of funny. I grew up as a cat person completely. And I had two cats before I even met my husband, before I even had my kids. And those cats were with me. Well, when the last one died, we had gotten a kitten a year prior to that. And she didn't cuddle with me the way I wanted her to. So I said, I'm going to have to go over to the dark side. And my daughter was like, you're just never going to get a dog. And I'm like, no, I want a man dog. Like, I want a big dog. Like, I want a dog. And so finally, my husband found this black lab. And so we went, and she was smart enough to come up to me. Her little brother got on my nerves. He was barking all over the place. I wouldn't touch him. And so she came up to me and she looked up at me, and I picked her up, and I just said, okay, she's it.
Aww.
And the first dog I had, I was like 40 years old, and that was her. And she is a black lab. She's beautiful, and she weighs about 80 pounds. And if I could take her everywhere, I would. But the ironic thing is now my cat, because of my lab, is very, very cuddly now too.
She's like, hey, wait, I'm in all that.
I'm very particular, but I love like black labs, and I don't know, they're just really good with other animals and with kids, and
very nice. Yeah, I grew up as a dog person. Then my kids loved cats. So a couple of years ago, we had gotten up to four cats in the house.
That's a lot.
We call them all the kids' cats. So we had a cat for my middle daughter. My son wanted the cats. We had two cats. Then my oldest moved back home with her two cats. So we had four. Mm-hmm. And one of the cats, his name is Beans. He's a black cat. He was all cuddly and sweet, full of personality, almost like a dog personality. My oldest moved out, took her two cats, and then we ended up getting a dog to replace the dog-like cat. So yeah, we have a dog now as well, and she often comes to the office. She's just in doggy daycare today. So one last question. Folks coming to the area, you've lived all over, you said you chose to come back here. Why Williamsburg Historic Triangle, you know, for military families coming here, you know, through deployment or looking to finish their career and finalize a home? Why pick our area? What are your favorite things? What do you tell folks about our Williamsburg and Historic Triangle area?
Well, so I'm going to address it based on, you said, if they're wanting to retire here or finish their tour here.
Sure.
So several things. One, on a practical point, is there's a lot of VA facilities around here. So on a practical point, you know, you can have Portsmouth, you can have Hampton, you can have Richmond, you can have several different places in between that offer the benefits that veterans deserve and should be getting more of, and in a more timely manner. The second thing too, is there's a lot of great facilities, like even the James Center at James City County Rec Center offers things for 55 plus people. They actually have clubs and excursions for them. Obviously we have all the historical places that you can go and walk and be a member. And what's really nice is if you're in this community, Jamestown is free. And I don't think a lot of people know that. You take your driver's license, you show them that you're a James City County resident, mm-hmm. and you can get into something that would normally cost you, what, like 40, 50 bucks a person? I could be exaggerating. I don't remember. It's been a while since
I've been. I think in Williamsburg, too, is like 10 bucks for a like locals pass.
Correct, correct. And even if you live outside of James City County, I can't remember. I think it's like $70-some for the whole year. So that gets you into everything into Colonial Williamsburg, which is really nice. I took my son and he got to fire muskets, and you go off and you get to have different experiences. And the Cry Witch too, so it doesn't matter how old you are. I really enjoyed doing that. I don't know if you have you experienced the Cry Witch? Okay, so in the House of Burgess, they have at night where they put on trials, that mock trials from what has historically happened in the past. And they have actor and actresses act them out. And you sit up there with the governor. So the governor is an actor, but then you set up with him and the jury. All of us are tourists or local people going to the program. Right. And we decide if we would have voted for someone that was guilty or innocent. And if we would have believed, based on what was presented, if they were a witch or not a witch.
Interesting.
And they did a fantastic job. Fantastic job.
It's going to be neat for them too. Like, because I'm sure different audiences might have different takes on it, on the guilt or innocence.
You know, and it was neat trying to get into that mindset of, if I was back in the 1800s, how would I have thought?
Right.
You know, I know how I would think now, but and one of the midwife's neighbors, like, she was very convincing. You know, those ones that you see in the movies that were like, no, she's a witch. Yeah, I mean, she was very convincing. Huh. And I'm just wondering if I would have had the same mindset as I do now, or if she would have convinced me otherwise.
Very interesting.
So, I mean, there's lots of different things that you can constantly look up to do in Williamsburg and around the area. And it's nice because we can go down to the beach. Like, I love even going down to Sandbridge and being there and going to the state park that's there. And you can actually bike and walk all the way down to the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Yeah. And the opposite season, mountains. It's not far to get to the mountains to go skiing.
Don't you have a nice Airbnb somewhere out there?
We got a couple of them. We do. Yeah, we've got a couple bunkers in the mountains near Massanutten, which is a big ski mountain out there.
Yeah.
But we love the beach. We love the mountains. And you get a mix of all of that here. We're kind of in the middle, and it's safe. It's family friendly. So, you know, it's a great place to be. We absolutely love it here.
You even have, like, the Capitol Trail that goes to, like, the Jamestown High School, where you can pick it up and take it all the way into Richmond, which is really nice. You know, it's nice that you can even go up to, I love that we have in Williamsburg, the Amtrak that you can take, and you can go all the way to, like, DC if you want to go up for a day. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to full with parking. You can take it in there and
that's cheap. Enjoy. If you buy the tickets mm-hmm. in advance, it's real cheap to take a train to DC and back. But you can keep going. You can go to Boston, New York, Philadelphia, like, all the places on that line are really convenient and fairly inexpensive.
So I have been raised in Williamsburg. We moved here when I was 4. I was originally in Chesapeake, and then we moved here. So I've been on and off in Williamsburg since I was 4. And I will have to say, even though it's grown, it still has, like, that small community feel to it, which is a rarity in growth to have that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a big, small town.
Yes.
And you see people all the time. You know, when you make some friends in town, you'll see them. There's only, you know, one real, we have two targets, but everybody really kind of goes to one. The one up on Monticello. There's one by Water Country also. Well, that's another great thing. We've got Water Country USA. We've got Busch Gardens. You know, a lot of fun stuff. Our kids are constantly at Busch Gardens. They just absolutely love it. And it's a good, safe, fun place for them to go and be entertained and, you know, hopefully not get into too much trouble while they're there.
I like all the zoos too. And that's another thing for military families. Like, so I'm a part of the Norfolk Zoo as mm-hmm. a member, and it is overall very inexpensive for a whole year. And you can go multiple times with your family. And if you have guests, you can bring them. So it's a great way to get discounts on annual passes to lots of things around here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great place to live. And if you're going to retire, there's lots to do.
And they can call me and I can help them, whether they're buying or selling, or if they want to do property management too.
So, Catherine, if they're going to find you, where do they reach out? What's your contact information, phone numbers, websites, whatever is the best way to get in touch with you if they want to learn more about our region, and even better if they want to look to buy or sell here?
So the best way to contact me is probably my phone number, 919-389-2324.
Awesome. Hey, this has been super fun. I appreciate you coming in as a guest today. Anybody listening, give us a like, tell your friends, share this information, put it on your social media, tell everybody you know about Catherine, and she can help them buy, sell, or even manage real estate here in the Williamsburg and Hampton Roads area. So thanks, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Got Your Six Real Estate Podcast with Kevin Amazon. We hope you found value in today's episode. If we've got your six, be sure to subscribe and share this podcast with someone who could benefit. For more resources and episodes, visit our website at gotyoursixrealestatepodcast.com. Until next time, we've got your six.